Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports show, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports. I'm Michael Barr.
I'm Scarlett Fu.
And, of course, very sad news over the weekend, learning that basketball legend and Hall of Famer Bill Russell, he passed away at the age of 88. He led the Boston Celtics to 11 championships over the course of his career and was also well known for his role as a civil rights activist. To dive into Russell's career, life, and legacy, we welcome Professor Aram Gutsuzian to the show. He's a professor of history at the University of Memphis and has written many books, including King of the Court, Bill Russell, and the Basketball Revolution. Professor Gutsuzian, welcome to the Bloomberg Business of Sports. I wish it was for a much happier story, but it is a very prominent story that's going on right now. Bill Russell, I had to dust off my brains to remember that two of those wins with the Celtics were when he was a head coach, and he just gave so much to the game, sir.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me, Michael and Scarlett. I really appreciate it. To your last point, you know, one of the underappreciated aspects of Bill Russell's legacy was those two final championships when he was the player coach of the Celtics. And, you know, that was at a time when the Celtics were no longer the real dominant team in the NBA. They were an older squad. They didn't come in first place in the Eastern Conference. You know, other teams had started to surpass them in the regular season, and he led them to these two improbable titles. And you got to remember, he was the first African-American coach of a major team sport in American history. So he's breaking barriers and leading his team to, you know, those were his 10th and 11th NBA titles over the course of 13 seasons, which is just an extraordinary record. You know, he's got to be considered the greatest winner in the history of American team sports.
I want to go back to when he was named the coach of the Celtics, because there was a lot of skepticism that accompanied his hiring. Can you talk a little bit about the circumstances that led to his hiring and what it tells you about Boston as a sports town and the strides that they've since made?
That's a really interesting question, Scarlett. You know, of course, his coach for his entire professional career had been Red Auerbach, who was stepping into a general manager role with the Celtics and stepping away from the bench. And at the end of the 1966 season, Auerbach had decided that the time had come, and he was exploring all sorts of other coaching options. One of his choices was a guy named Alex Hannum, who had coached a number of professional teams and had a good reputation. But a lot of the Celtics, and in particular Russell, were quite resistant to that choice because they weren't necessarily impressed with Hannum's relationship with black players over the course of his career. And as you know, a number of the veteran Celtics who'd since retired were approached about the job, a lot of them were resistant to taking the job too, because, you know, again, the Celtics seemed to be like sort of on the decline at that point. And then there was the question of how do you deal with Bill Russell, right, who sort of looms over the team, your former teammate. And so ultimately it came down to sort of a basketball decision, a personality decision. And those are part of the reasons why Russell took on the job. But also, you know, he was very aware at the time of the significance of taking on this job as a black man leading an integrated team in the middle of the 1960s. And so politics also played a role in his decision to accept the job. And as you suggest, there was pretty considerable skepticism among some of the Boston sports press, which had always been a little bit resistant to Russell in different ways. And when they did not win the title in 1967, they lost to Philadelphia in the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, they pointed to his mistakes in terms of coaching, that he wasn't managing his team as well as he could have. And they thought this was a failure. And so for him to then win the NBA titles in 68 and 69 kind of left the sports press in Boston in awe at this incredible achievement.
And you're right about the press. There was a quote that Bill Russell said. He said it last year when he was on CBS Mornings. And he had a game where he had just a splendid triple-double. and he just had all these, just a great game. And I think the Boston Herald wrote, thank goodness he had Cousy.
I remember I had a game where I had 25 points, 25 rebounds, 10 blocks, and the Boston Herald said I was lucky I got to play with Cousy.
And that's what Bill Russell kind of put up with.
For sure. And part of the way to think about this is what basketball is going through during Russell's career. It is becoming both a much more dynamic sport and a much more a sport dominated by taller, more fully athletic players, but also it's becoming a more black sport at the same time. So Bob Cousy, who is, of course, an outstanding point guard for the Celtics, a legend, was the hero to many of the white Boston sports fans. And he was, you know, he was 6 feet, 2 inches. He was somewhat relatable. He was great with the media. He was a personable and thoughtful guy. Russell, of course, held himself aloof from the press. He felt like they didn't understand him and that they were always going to treat him with bigotry. And so he created kind of this armor around him where he wouldn't sign autographs, where he would only sort of give of himself to people who he really trusted. And so they had very different relationships with the media and thus with Boston's fan base as well. And so that was continually driving Russell's frustrations. But you also got to realize this. It was also what drove Russell to be such a great winner. You know, from his college career, he said, you know, I dedicated myself more than anything else to winning because that's something that they can't take away from me, right? That in your individual honors might not come. The adulation that a white player receives, he might not get. But no one could take away his championships.
Yeah, I think about how he spent his entire pro career in Boston, and there was this not quite comfortable relationship with the Boston sports media and perhaps some fans as well. And I read that when the Celtics wanted to retire his number six jersey in 1972, he insisted that it be done without anyone there, with the stands empty, which kind of boggles the mind today in 2022.
You know, Russell would sometimes say, you know, I play for the Celtics, not for Boston. That, you know, he very much identified with his team and with the culture of that team, and it was very meaningful to him. But he had resentments with the city itself. Part of that resistance to having his number retired was the same resistance that he had, for instance, to signing autographs, that he would later have to being enshrined in the Basketball Hall of Fame, that he didn't want to be considered as a commodity, that he wanted to be seen as an individual, as someone with sort of the full range of humanity. The other key aspect to think about there is that Russell was very much involved in the civil rights struggle in Boston in the 1960s. And, you know, he participated in, you know, he was a member of the NAACP. The big battleground in Boston in the 60s was over schools and racial integration. The state had passed what was called the Racial Imbalance Act, which was supposed to integrate schools in the mid-1960s, but it was resisting that in practice. And Russell was an active spokesman for racial justice at that time, as well as coming to the South and participating in the March on Washington and going to a conference at the White House. You know, he was a very politically astute actor.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
That also is true that he talked with Martin Luther King, and he also sat alongside Muhammad Ali during the time when he refused to go to the Vietnam War. And I wonder if you could take us through that for people who do not understand. I am sure that there were some people in the Celtics organization thinking about, oh, no, don't do that. This could become another Colin Kaepernick story where you stand up for civil rights and then it all falls apart?
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, Muhammad Ali by 66, 67, when he's making his choice not to serve in the Vietnam War, is, you know, receiving an enormous backlash from the press. And people think he's misguided, and people think he's a dupe, and all these things. And Russell, along with Jim Brown, along with then Lew Alcindor, now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and a number of other athletes, meet with Ali in Cleveland in 1967 to sort of discuss this, right? To sort of hear out Ali. And it's being portrayed in the press as they're there to try to convince Ali to change his mind. But for the players, more they tend to see it more as, we want to hear what he has to say. And Russell emerges from this, and he writes an article for Sports Illustrated that basically defends Ali's decision. He says, you know, here's a guy who's doing this out of principle, out of religious conviction. He's only suffering for this, right? He's losing his title. He's losing his money. He's losing his, you know, his lifeblood. But he's doing what he thinks is right. So there's nothing selfish about this. It's a really sort of powerfully written article about kind of like the state of American culture and politics by the late 60s.
You know, Professor, your area of specialty is the civil rights movement. You've been teaching courses on U.S. history since 1877. You focus very much on African-American history as well. I'm wondering if you could place Bill Russell when it comes to how Boston fits in and the business of sports, not just in that one city, but across the U.S. Put it into perspective for us.
In terms of the business of sports, you know, one of these things that we can't sort of separate from Russell's legacy is to think about him as one of the engines that's driving the NBA's commercial transformation. When he steps into the NBA in the mid-1950s, it's a small-time league. It's got a reputation as a so-called Bush League. It's not considered a major sport along the lines of baseball or boxing or even professional football by that time. And by the time he retires in 1969, you know, there's big national television contracts, there's commercial jet travel, there's modern race, labor relations, and a lot of that is driven by Russell and his peers. They make the game more dynamic, more television friendly. His rivalry with Will Chamberlain is what drives the a lot of the television exposure, and so he brings that to the fore. And you almost can't separate that from the political aspect, from the civil rights aspect, because it's the increased visibility of the NBA that gives Russell and Elgin Baylor and Oscar Robertson and other black athletes in the NBA a platform through which to speak out against racial injustice. And so those are sort of intertwined factors. In my book, I call it the basketball revolution. You know, Russell changes the way basketball is played, the way basketball is perceived, and ultimately what its meaning is in terms of American culture, in terms of race, and in terms of civil rights.
I want to expand more on what you were just saying. Can you imagine if Bill Russell was playing today, the endorsements he would get? It would be off the chart. But like you said, back in that time, it was a totally different era.
Well, very much so. When he breaks into sport in the 1950s, the expectation was that an athlete needed to be sort of humble and soft-spoken and deferential, kind of the models were people like Joe DiMaggio and Joe Louis. And this was particularly true for black athletes, right? They were supposed to always sort of be make sure that they didn't offend white sensibilities. And Russell kind of goes through kind of a personal and political crisis over the course of the 60s, you know, very much driven by the civil rights movement. What am I doing to help society? And part of his decision is the way that he's going to present himself is unique, that he's going to not adhere to white expectations, that he is going to be, if he has militant or defiant thoughts, he's going to express them. And here's a guy who defends Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam in the early 1960s when there's no other black athletes who are doing so prior to Muhammad Ali's conversion. So it's a different world in a lot of ways in terms of the relationship between an athlete and the media at that time, particularly for black athletes.
What do you think his legacy is for modern players like a LeBron James, like a Steph Curry? How do they look at a Bill Russell in terms of what they're able to do and the opportunities that they have now as a result of his playing, his coaching?
Mm-hmm. Right. What I think for the modern generation, for the LeBrons and the Currys of today, right, in some ways they build off of multiple levels in terms of how the NBA has advanced and the icons who preceded them, right? That players like Russell made it legitimate to speak out on political issues, to advocate for the African-American community, especially as the sport is sort of mass marketing black athletes. And then the next generation, right, the sort of which we consider as more of an apolitical generation, the Michael Jordans and the Shaquille O'Neals and so on, also just sort of take that profile of the NBA and bring it up even higher to a much different degree, so that when we have another sense of racial crisis, as we've had in recent years, right, dating, if you think about the Trayvon Martin case, and if you think about the murders in Ferguson and so on, and then the election of Donald Trump, right, it brings all these athletes back into a political world, but now with this whole new level of exposure.
We are pretty much running out of time, but I'm going to bring it down to some good old bar stool talk and some barbershop talk when we talk about Bill Russell. I think he was probably the greatest defensive player ever to play the game. And if UCLA's John Wooden can say that, that's good enough for me. Professor, just to leave it on that note, what are your thoughts about that so people can go to the bar and talk about Bill Russell?
I would tend to agree. I think, in terms of, he was the first athlete to really dominate basketball through defense. He was fine on offense, but he was, he changed the game based on what he did with defense and rebounding. And I don't know that we can say that about really any other player in NBA history. So at the very least, you have to consider him the best defensive player in NBA history. And I think, again, like I said, you have to consider him the greatest winner in American sports history.
Professor Aram Gutsuzian. Professor of History at the University of Memphis, written many books, including King of the Court, Bill Russell, and the Basketball Revolution. You were so kind to come join us on such short notice because of the sad news. Thank you, Professor.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
This has been the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. I'm Michael Barr, along with Scarlett Fu. Catch us here each and every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, exploring the world of money and sports. Catch me on Twitter at Big Barr Sports.
And I'm on Twitter at Scarlett Fu.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports on Bloomberg Radio around the world.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.